You're listening to Retronauts, a part of the HyperX Podcast Network. Find us and more great shows like us at podcast.hyperx.com.
This week on Retronauts, you have the power to help Cloud and Sephiroth make a beautiful family. Everyone, and welcome to Retronauts. I'm your host for this week, Nadia Oxford of the Acts of the Blood God RPG podcast. Thank you for joining me. Today we're going to talk about something that's very near and dear to my heart, and that is fan fictions and the various benefits thereof. This is going to be a lot of fun. For this worryingly meaty topic, I'm joined by two very special guests, authors Laura Morrow and Sarah Blair, both of whom say, or confess, that they got their start as fanfiction writers. So let's start with you, Sarah. Say a quick hello and give us an introduction to your work.
Hi, I'm Sarah, and I actually got my start writing X-Files fanfiction. And now I write the Tides of Darkness series, which is kind of like X-Files meets King Arthur. It's about a paranormal investigator in New York City, and it's a lot of fun, so... Yeah.
That actually does sound like a lot of fun. Like King Arthur and X-Files, there's nothing there that's not to love. And how about you, Laura? Say hello.
Hi, nice to meet you all. I'm Laura Morrow. I got my start writing, initially Final Fantasy VII fan fiction, but I did dabble in X-Files as well. And now I write short horror fiction. So yeah, that's how I got my start.
Oh, that's awesome. Man, like, we'll get into it, but Final Fantasy VII's fanfic is real, that's just real sicko mode right there in terms of fanfiction. That is the entryway for so many people. But, yeah, we'll get into that. To put things very broadly, if you're not familiar, and I know you two ladies are, but for our general audience, fanfiction is the act of writing fiction in a universe that's already established by another author or creator. In modern times, this usually means a lot of fanfic is based around, like, licensed properties, e.g., we just talked about X-Files, Final Fantasy VII, also, like, the Marvel Universe, the Hunger Games. Games, literally any property you could think of, there has certainly been a fan fiction for it. That said, fan fiction has been around as long as people have been telling stories. I mean, what is Paradise Lost but an angsty AU telling of the Bible? In another age, it'd have like a whole bunch of My Chemical Romance lyrics peppered all over it. Most studios and publishers are fine with fan fiction. They see it as like good, easy community engagement. It's also free advertising, let's be honest. But I think we can, both of us, not suggesting we're old, but I think we're well-learned and wise and know that there was a time when fan fiction wasn't looked upon quite as friendly as it is today. Like, one of my writing teachers actually called fan fiction writing like a creatively bankrupt act that was actually bordering on illegal. And that kind of almost scared me out of writing fan fiction for a long time. But there's also certain examples, like we were talking about X-Files. Wasn't that quite heavily come down upon by Fox? Like, were you part of that at all, Sarah? Do you remember anything about that?
I do remember. I was a reader then, and I never posted any fan fiction in any public way. I wrote it just for myself, but... That was one of the reasons I never posted. I was a little bit too frightened of all of that. And I remember people used to get so creative with their disclaimers at the beginning of the fan fiction.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, referring to Chris Carter as Mr. Twinkle Eyes and just getting really, really creative with that. That was one of my favorite parts of the fan fiction, was trying to, you know, see how different people did their disclaimers. It was pretty fun. And then I recently noticed someone on Twitter asking about it and saying, did people really have to do disclaimers? Was that just something that they did for fun? Because they were they were looking through kind of the older archives.
Right.
And like, why did people put the disclaimers? They didn't understand why they did that. I was like, that was actually a thing that you had to kind of do. And that was sort of, you know, I don't know if it was like a necessary legal thing that really counted for anything. I don't think it was. I think it was just a way to make people feel better about writing and posting.
It's a magical incantation to keep us safe. That's all.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Stay away, lawyers. Yeah. I'm just picturing the lawyers looking at this gobbledygook by some 13-year-old and saying, oh, they got us. Airtight case. Can't order the C&D.
Right. Yeah. And at the reverse, I was out of fan fiction for a long time and only recently got back into it and discovered AO3. And
yes,
I was looking through the fan fiction on there. I was like, why don't they have the disclaimers? I don't understand. How are they allowed to do this? What's happening? I was very confused.
That's amazing. Just like, why are these people not in jail? What's going on here?
Yeah, just the opposite effect. So
it kind of reminds me, like, all those weird disclaimers and whatnot, how we thought they would help. Reminds me of when the age of file sharing and LimeWire and stuff like that, you'd rename very subtly files so they couldn't get nabbed. They got nabbed anyway. They lasted for a bit longer that way. How about you, Laura? You know, you mentioned you wrote some X-Files fic. I'm wondering if you remember anything from that particular dark age.
I remember because, like, you talk about AO3 and obviously FF.net, and I remember, I mean, I'm you know, full disclosure, a fandom old. And when I was posting and reading X-Files fic, it was all on, like, various archives. Like, you didn't have centralized archives like we do now. So you used to have people hosting their own kind of little archives. And then I think we all felt like they were these kind of almost semi-secret corners of the internet where the big bad lawyers couldn't get us. But it was interesting as well because, like, obviously Fox was a bit funny about fanfic, but I remember that the writers of the X-Files were quite positive about fan work. So I remember, I can't remember what episode it was, but there's an episode that has the names of several kind of fan artists and fan writers that
I know which episode it is.
Do you know which one is it? Please tell me.
It's Alone. It's in season 8, episode 19. I literally just recorded our episode on it. So it's fresh in my mind.
I'm so glad, actually, because I kind of want to go back and see that again. I'm really glad you know that. Yeah, which I thought was a really cool thing, you know, like this kind of acknowledgement of, you know, we see the love you have for this thing that we're making and we share it. And, you know, it's even if Fox, you know, as an entity were being kind of, it's our intellectual property, the fact that the creators were sitting there going, you know, we love how much you love this, that's a really meaningful thing, I think.
Yeah,
that was, yeah, definitely. And you were mentioning the real ancient days of kind of decentralized archives, because I used to run a Mega Man fan page, and I used to write and host a lot of fan fiction. And back in those days, what you did was you gave your, like, I use ClarisWorks on a Mac. So you'd give your file to the proprietor of the site and they'd convert it to HTML and they'd put it all up. It was real schlep, but it was a real labor of love at the same time. So that goes way back, I think. But I think even further back, of course, you have the Star Trek zines and whatnot, which is even outside of my time.
Yeah, I mean, there's something amazing about doing about physical. I mean, actually, zines have kind of made a comeback, haven't they? But the idea of, like, you know, actually physically printing them out and handing them out. I was a little bit late to that. I know there were some X-Files zines around, but that was a little bit before, a tiny bit before my time. But yeah, I remember the Final Fantasy VII fanfic that there were two main sites at the time. Icy Brian, Icy Brian, and the other one was Lioness World.
And, that one I don't know.
Yeah, I think that was a very British one. I don't know, the person who ran the site was British. And, you had to send them your file and they'd put the file up. And then when you had a chapter update, you send them the chapter update. And it was all like, you know, none of this kind of really convenient AO3 where you could just upload it. You know, it was such a lot of work that you went into it. It was a real kind of labor of passion, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, not to mention that there was no social media to promote on it. It was just like, hey, send me out an email.
You had to find the archives, like, you know, the old-fashioned way. It was, you know, the word of mouth. Maybe that's why we felt safer, because you had to kind of put effort into finding stuff, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I could just picture the lawyers being completely stumped by 13-year-old girls. Like, more power to you, girls. I love you. And everyone who wrote fan fiction back in the day. Actually, the reason, speaking of young people, the reason why I wanted to talk about this episode is I think that fan fiction, speaking for myself and maybe for you too as well, fan fiction had a lot of benefits to helping me become a professional writer. Like, I think that fan fiction can be a really good way to supplement writing, teaching how to teach writing, how to teach grammar, how to teach spelling. But we'll get into that. Basically, what I want to know first is, what was your first fan fiction that you read and the first one you wrote, starting with you, Sarah?
I don't remember the exact first one that I read, but I do remember there was one called Dance Without Sleeping. And I want to say, I think it was Lydia Bauer that wrote it, but I can't, I'm not totally sure. I just remember the title Dance Without Sleeping. And it was, you know, obviously X-Files, Mulder and Scully. And I don't remember a lot about it. I just remember just being amazed that this world could exist outside of the show, and how enlightening that was to me. Like, I was just like, wow, people are, you know, making up their own things for the show. And they're like using, like putting the characters, and like, this is amazing. Like, it's everything that I want from the show, because, you know, being a shipper of the X-Files, I wanted Mulder and Scully to get together.
Yeah, of course.
You know, what I wanted. And, you know, obviously on the show that, you know, it took a while. So yeah, we were really impatient, and we needed them to just smash their face together. So
now kiss.
Big mood.
Among other things. But, yeah, it was definitely an introduction to a world that I had not even known existed. And I was probably too young for that. But here we are. You know, it definitely had an influence on me. So
you all have to learn. We all have to learn sometime. You know?
I write adult books, so I don't keep the characters from kissing in my books at all.
No, no, they wouldn't sell very well if that was the case, I think.
No.
How about you, Laura? Do you remember anything about earliest reading, writing fantasy?
Yeah, I kind of do. I remember I was about 14, so I was, you know, pretty young in hindsight. And I don't remember, again, I don't remember the exact first one that I read, but I remember the first one that I was really captivated by was, it was Final Fantasy VII. It was called Sink to the Bottom with You by Catalina. And it was like a multi-chapter. Yeah, it was Vincent and Yuffie, which was a weird combination. But like
somehow that works, though.
It really did. And the way they wrote it, they wove all this original stuff in, and like original characters, original storylines, and it just worked so beautifully. Like I was in awe of their writing, and that fic was what made me want to write mine. And then I wrote a terrible epic Final Fantasy VII fic, which was like 27 chapters and had original characters in it, which was not as good. It was awful. But like the fact that I did write a 27 chapter epic awful fanfic, I think was a necessary stepping stone in kind of, you know, writing things that were less awful.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Sarah. You didn't get to tell me what your first fanfic you wrote was, if you remember.
I don't really remember, to be honest. It was probably just, I would imagine, Mulder and Scully kissing, and like that's all they did. There was no plotting. I had not even begun to imagine that I could be on that level yet. Mm-hmm. So it was how I started writing and how I felt like maybe it was something that I could do eventually. But as far as like my actual writing fan fiction, I just kind of dabbled here and there in it. And
right.
So it was just, you know, for me to kind of figure it out. And it wasn't anything I ever felt comfortable sharing or anything like that. But, you know, later I did, like recently, now that I've had some practice at it, I actually did start writing and posting fan fiction. So,
Yeah. That's like, I'm still writing fan fiction, even though I'm writing professionally, because it's just such a good outlet. You know, it's kind of like
it is
just scratching yourself in private. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I continue this metaphor. That's why they pay me the big bucks, I guess.
Writing novels takes forever. And just, you know, sitting down, sometimes you just want to write like a quick, you know, 2000 word thing. And it's fun. And you feel like you can finish something and get, you know, an immediate reaction.
Yeah,
it's like, exactly. As soon as I post anything, everybody's like, it's like immediate gratification.
Yeah,
like, actually, I can write. That's great. I don't have to wait, you know, 6 months till my next book comes out. I can, you know.
Totally.
No, absolutely.
It is like brain candy, isn't it? And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Sometimes you just need the boost of writing something, putting it out there. People go, OMG, I love this. And you go, oh, I can do it. You know, I feel validated. Yeah. My existence as a writer is you know. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, I think a little bit of self-indulgence is a really good and healthy thing, especially for writers, because it's a lonely job and it's a slog sometimes.
Yes. No, absolutely. You're absolutely right about that. I came into fan fiction a bit of a strange way, I suppose, in that the earliest things I remember reading, you'll appreciate this, Laura, is Archie Comics and Beano. Like,
Beano.
I have a lot of relatives in Ireland, and they always send over Beano. They used to send over a ton of Beano stuff, so I learned how to read using Beano, which probably didn't help my sentence structure whatsoever. As in addition to Archie Comics, I read a lot of Archie Comics. My parents collected them, so I just kind of remember going around and looking at the words and trying to figure them out alongside the pictures. So inevitably, the first fan fictions I started writing were Archie fan fictions. And what I would do is sometimes I'd write the characters in a new situation. More commonly, though, I would take a story that I read, and of course, since Archie is a comic, I'd take that visualization and try to put it back into narrative, which is, I guess, a bit of a backwards pursuit, but it's what I did nonetheless. So that was my start. And then in grade six, I was like really, really, really super duper into video games and Super Mario in particular. And I remember they had old cartoons for Super Mario Brothers, like Super Mario Brothers Super Show, Super Mario Brothers 3. And they were terrible. And even as a kid, I recognized, oh my God, these are just not fun or funny or you know, you could make Mario and Luigi swear, you know, why would you not do that? Why would you not do something fun with this, people? So for grade six, for my English project, I wrote a fan fiction about Mario and Luigi, and they were in a fight and the princess got fed up and rescued herself. And it was awful, but it was like just magical chaos at the same time too, that only a child can really manage, I suppose. And this is where the whole idea to me of school and fan fiction intersect. Because when I think back, by all rights, that fan fiction probably should have gotten me in trouble as a kid, because I was using swear words and all sorts of other things. Like, it wasn't a very G-rated fan fiction. I was a cute little girl with like pigtails, and I bet my teacher was kind of shocked. But at the same time, she said, look, this is a really good story. You're a very good writer. And I think you have something here. You should really keep on writing. Now, I have had teachers who have said, as I mentioned, that fan fiction is creatively bankrupt. It's actually illegal. You shouldn't be doing it. So here was a teacher who said, this is great. Keep it up. If I had a teacher who had said, this is illegal, this is terrible, this is you cheating, it probably would have just destroyed my love of writing right then and there. Because I was a very shy sort of kid who hated confrontation, and I would have been shattered. And I wouldn't put myself back together. So I know that was a bit of a long divergence. I apologize for that, but I thought it was just kind of an interesting perspective to bring to the table here.
Absolutely. I don't know that my teachers even knew what fanfic was. I don't know at the time, but I do remember very clearly doing one of my research papers. I think it was my freshman year, so I was probably like 13 or 14 on the Roswell incident, because X-Files. I was so obsessed with X-Files. So every research paper, everything I did was probably like about aliens or Roswell or anything like that. And my teachers did encourage that. When we did get to write short stories, I always enjoyed it. I don't remember what I wrote about, but I always had fun doing it. And my teachers, I was always like really good friends with my English teachers.
So
they were so supportive, and I'm actually still friends with one of my teachers.
That's really nice.
My junior and senior year. But yeah, she still encourages me and buys my books.
That's awesome.
That is great.
Do you find it really odd though that like, you know, teachers saying that fan fiction is morally, is bankrupt or uncreative or anything like that? And it's just like, no other creative pursuit do we look at it that way. Like, if you get a kid a crochet kit, right, the kit is there, it's done for you. Okay, there's no creativity in a crochet kit, but your kid is learning to crochet, right? Or if you give them a paint by numbers, okay, they're using the paint by numbers, but it's still, we understand inherently that is still a creative activity, you know.
There's nothing
wrong with using a structure. I think the idea of it is very much, if you foster the love of something, it doesn't really matter how that love comes about. It doesn't matter how you learn the skills. As long as you learn the skills, as long as you learn to love it. And it's just, I don't really understand the attitude of, unless you're writing something that is completely original. Like you said earlier on, you know, and you're totally right, you know, Paradise Lost is Bible fan fiction, you know.
Yeah.
There's so many other examples of that. Neil Gaiman, you know, very famous authors riffed off so many other, you know, retellings of Snow White, for example, and things like that. Retelling stories is part of our proud tradition of being storytellers. That's, you know, oral tradition is all about retelling and re-spinning stories. Folk tales are the same thing. You know, we adapt folk tales. And really, fan fiction is just another method of that. It's just another way of us looking at an established story. And actually, you know what? I'm going to be controversial. I'm going to say that, you know, to call it creatively bankrupt is actually completely incorrect, because unless you're just word for word retelling the story that you've just observed, there is creativity involved. You know, look at alternative universe fanfic, or look at the ways that you're adapting the characters to make them do what you want. Or, you know, with X-Files fanfic, when people write case fics, they write their own cases. And I used to love those fics.
Right.
Because, you know, people are bringing their own influences into it. I just think it's nuts that anybody would look at that, a child writing fanfiction, and say, oh, you're doing it wrong, you know.
No, absolutely. No, and that's an excellent way of putting it. I never even thought of that. It would be kind of like handing your child a coloring book, then getting angry, like, why are you coloring someone else's picture?
Yeah.
Go make your own picture and color it in. Yeah.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because, I mean, I also incorporate, like, Arthurian legend into my stories, too. And, like, basically all of Arthurian legend is just fanfic of other Arthurian legend. Like, it's not even... Like, they just all are like, let's take these characters and make them do French things this time. And, like, it's not – they all just borrow from each other and retell the same stuff in different ways. And just – it's all the same characters, but – completely different stories. And
I think it comes down to at least part, you know, the way that we perceive high art and low art, which is another thing I've got a big bugbear about. I, you know, and I'm sure, you know, Nadi, you must understand this as somebody, you know, is into video games and stuff like that. But and you as well, Sarah, with the X-Files and stuff like that, the idea that genre things or video games are somehow low art. So anything associated with that must also be low art, which is also rubbish. You know, the idea that some art is inherently, you know, Arthurian legends are okay because it comes from classical literature. But, you know, God forbid that you should want to write about our modern folk tales, and comics are modern folk tales. You know, all of this stuff is modern folklore, right?
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right about that.
Sorry, I got my soapbox about this stuff, but
No. I was actually going to ask you guys, so we've already talked about what the challenges we faced as fan fiction was perceived, but what other problems did you have writing fan fiction, especially back in the olden days? Like, let's face it, fans on fanfiction.net can be pretty catty for a start.
Not good.
I mean, I was so obsessed with it. I didn't want to ever stop reading fan fiction. I would print it out and take it to school
in
like
binder.
These secret manila folders.
Yeah.
And just like put it in the back of my notebook and like read during class and like hand it out to all my friends.
Yeah.
And like, did you get this? And I'm like, oh, you should read this one during lunch. And like, we would trade back and forth like between classes and like pass these, you know, secret nondescript folders. It was very X-Files-y, you know?
That's great. I love that so much.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah, it's good times.
I'm trying to think of, I don't think any of my friends were really into fan fiction. In fact, I kept it kind of on the secret down low when I wrote it. I thought it was like, see, this was about 1995 when I started. And it was like, oh my God, I'm such a nerd. I'm going to go to jail. I just all this like mix of emotions going through my head. So that kind of had me a little bit spooked about the whole thing. And I remember being like terrified because I shared a computer with my family. And if, you know, I'm a middle child, only girl in a family of brothers. So if they found this, I'd be dead. So, and this in particular, this was my Mega Man X fan fiction writing phase. So I was really, really, really into this. This is actually how things really set off with me in terms of my career. And met a lot of friends, met my husband eventually. So it's, it was a small steps for big results, and those small steps were quite terrifying. Like I said, I hid my stuff. Eventually, you kind of do that thing where you change the file to something kind of, you know, discreet or like, hey, homework.txt, and that never fools anybody. Once a brother knows something is yours, they're going to go snooping around. So eventually, praise the Lord, I found out how to password protect doc files, and that changed my life.
I remember discovering nice. That. Yeah. I had the same thing as you, the shared computer, the brother. Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I wasn't even writing anything particularly illicit, but it was just a fact of like, and I'm still like that now a little bit. Like, I kept it on the down low with, like you did, more out of the fact that I didn't really know anybody else who was into it. But even as an adult, you know, it's not a shame thing. It's not even a privacy thing. It's just, it's because fanfiction is my thing. It's my thing for me only, you know, it's my indulgence space. So I don't really share it so much because, you know, I've got like certain groups of online friends who I do share it with, but it's my thing for me, you know, the published writing is for everyone, but fanfic is just for me to go hog wild with whatever I want to write. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. I do kind of still keep it a little bit on the down low.
I am, my modern fanfiction, I try to keep it on the down low, that I'm just like star for attention. I'm like, hey, everybody, look at this story I wrote about Final Fantasy IV characters kissing, and it inevitably gets out there. So I can't help myself.
It is fun. When I first started dabbling in it again, it was kind of funny because the way I got into it again is that I do an X-Files podcast. So I had friends and listeners that I had become friends with, and you know, they knew that I'm a writer and had, you know, read my first book when it came out, and they're like, you're such a good writer, like, don't you write fanfic? And I was like, I kind of did like a long time ago, but I don't really do it anymore. And they're like, no, you should really write something. And I was like, okay. And I was really shy about it. It's like, because before I never knew really anybody that read it. Like, I, you know, shared other people's stories with my friends, but I never told them that I had thought about writing myself.
Yeah.
So now that they're like, oh, well, you're a writer and you love X-Files, so of course you're going to write fan fiction. I was like, am I though? I don't know. So I was very reluctant to get back into it, but I wrote a story just for fun and shared it with, you know, like two people, and they're like, you have to put this on AO3. And I was like, I don't know. But finally I caved and did it. And the response was just so exciting. Everybody really liked it. And I was like, okay, this is fun. And so, you know, I did a little bit more. It's been a while since I posted anything, but yeah, it's been fun to get out there again and actually share it with people finally after all this time.
The serotonin is unparalleled, isn't it?
It kind of is, for sure.
Yeah. I had like a similar trajectory that I wrote it as a kid, and then for a while I stopped, and I think it was a combination of like, in my head, it was, I can be a sensible writer or I can be an indulgent fanfiction, but I can't be both, which obviously is incorrect. And I've kind of, you know, realized that as I got older, but I did go through a phase of, no, I must focus on proper writing. You know, I did go through that. And then I got into Metal Gear Solid and Live Journal. Oh, Live Journal, I miss it so much.
Oh.
And I joined a Live Journal community, which I've met some people who are still some of my best friends now. And it was the same thing as you. It was like, oh, why don't you write some fanfiction? I was like, oh, I don't think I can. And they were like, yeah, sure you can. And then as soon as you kind of like dip your toe back in the water, it's like, that's it. I'm here. I'm back.
Yep. did you guys have like, I know fandom is a whole drama thing now, and it was a drama thing then, but we mentioned LiveJournal a minute ago. I do think that things were better than before social media. Things still could be a huge mess in terms of fandom back in the day. And did you have any problems like running afoul of, you know, people, unfortunately?
I didn't.
Oh, you're lucky. No, I think, yeah, like obviously you did have problems in the Live Journal days. Like it wasn't a utopia, but I do look back on it really fondly in that there was none of this kind of slightly odd puritanism about what you can and can't write.
Yeah.
And, you know, all these forbidden things that, oh, if you write this, you're a bad person. And that, I mean, that just wasn't really there. You know, when you did get problems, it was because it was shippers fighting with other shippers. You know, I mean, Final Fantasy VII is the classic, you know, oh, Cloud and Aerith or Cloud and Tifa, all that. Nonsense.
I mean, both of them, duh.
Exactly, right? He's got two hands. But yeah, you got a lot of ship wars and stuff like that, and that still goes on. But I think, you know, I won't go into it too much. I've got a kind of a working theory that the nature of Tumblr and Twitter as platforms and the way that they make it impossible to curate communities and curate your spaces is what's fostered this kind of very defensive, tribalistic attitude in fandom now, and this kind of very everyone's on the defensive and everyone wants to attack. I do think it is the nature of the platforms. So, you know, if I had an ounce of coding sense, I would create a LiveJournal-esque platform, but I don't. So, you know, we make do with the tools that we've got.
I think that makes sense. Yeah. I was on AOL. So I got on AOL. So the way that was all set up is, you know, you had your chat rooms where you would go and they would be specifically labeled like Romo spoilers, you know. So as soon as an episode of The X-Files was over, I would like hop on AOL, find my Romo episode spoiler, whatever, and like get in there. And it was very, you know, limited as far as the scope goes. Cause like, I was like, I'm not a no Romo.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be in that one. I'm going to be in the shipper room chatting with other shippers. And it was very, you know, it was a good bubble to be in.
And that's great though, isn't it? Because then you know, Romos don't have to deal with ship content. You don't have to censor yourself because, mm-hmm. you know, then you've got your space for Mulder and Krycek shippers who are out there doing their own thing, yes. You know. LiveJournal was the same, you know, we had an MGS, Metal Gear Solid / community, and you know exactly what you're getting on the tin there is moderated. You know, there was mm-hmm. rules about what you could post and, you know, things that had to be put behind cuts and all of that kind of thing. And it was just so much more curation and community mindedness, you know, rather than this kind of constant stream of stuff that you can't avoid, you can't filter for, you can't tag for.
Yeah.
No kind of spaces mm-hmm. for people who are interested in this thing but not that thing, or, you know, that just doesn't exist anymore. You either get all or nothing, and I think people get resentful of that.
Make room for huge plays with the HyperX Alloy Origin 65 mechanical gaming keyboard and the Pulsefire Haste wireless mouse. The Alloy Origin 65 has a functionally compact form factor, keeping the arrow keys while ditching the numpad and the F keys. The Pulsefire Haste is the lightest wireless mouse from HyperX, featuring a robust connection and the precision you need to click heads. The Alloy Origin 65 and Pulsefire Haste wireless, a terrific twosome to keep your setup clean and clutter-free.
You love Japan and video games? Well, so do we. We're Kinsey and Mark from Kyoto Indie Dev's Chuhai Labs. Join us twice monthly for games, silly Japan news, and all-around nonsense. We stink at making commercials.
We f***ing got this one, bro.
Be sure to stop by the Chuhai Labs Discord to chat about our games or ask us questions.
Chuhai Labs and the Nasty Labs podcast. We're legally the best.
Make room for huge plays with the HyperX Alloy Origins 65 mechanical gaming keyboard and the Pulsefire Haste wireless mouse. The Alloy Origins 65 has a functionally compact form factor, keeping the arrow keys without the numpad and function keys. The Pulsefire Haste is the lightest wireless mouse from HyperX, featuring a robust connection, up to 100 hours of battery life, and it's even water resistant. The Alloy Origins 65 and Pulsefire Haste Wireless. Keep your setup clean and clutter-free with the Alloy Origins 65 mechanical keyboard and the Pulsefire Haste Wireless Mouse.
The Hardcore Gaming 101 podcast is on a mission to rank the top games of all time.
I like the idea that when Bruce Wayne gets angry, he switches to the Batman voice.
Why do you have such a problem making boomerangs shaped like a bat?
You mean like Batman?
Not like Batman! Just make it for me, Bruce Wayne! I can't even with this guy!
It's a Herculean task, and I'd be lying if I said it hasn't taken a toll on our cognitive faculties.
Most people would be happy to have a job during a global pandemic. Guinness!
Hardcore Gaming 101, twice a week, every week, right here on the HyperX Podcast Network.
Hello,
already gone over how, like, fanfiction should be taught in schools, but I also think it's not only a good opportunity for kids to learn how to write, but also how to critique each other without just destroying each other's, like, shark in a tank. Like, we're all probably very familiar with the state of social media, more so than ever, and whereas it can be a really encouraging tool to use, it can also have some really, I find kids are really vicious to each other. I mean, kids are always vicious to each other, that's not news, but just the way they kind of go after each other for, like, say, promoting the wrong ship or doing something quote-unquote problematic, I find it quite depressing. I feel like maybe school could have a little bit of a course in you know, alongside fanfic, how to write fanfic, just kind of calming down and having fun and critiquing without eating. You know what I mean? What do you think about that idea?
Well, I think it's definitely a great help to teach constructive criticism in any shape or form, and how to form, you know, ideas and opinions that critique the actual work instead of a person's thoughts or ideas. So it's definitely would be helpful, I think, to have that and to encourage that. And I do think that perhaps on the flip side, it could be a great way for kids to discover friends who might share their opinions and who might, you know, they might make a new friend out of it. Be like, yeah, I didn't know you shipped these two people. Yeah, I do too. Amazing, you know.
I have friends who are like 20 years ago from like my oldest days of writing fanfics, and some of my best friends of all time. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And fanfic is such a great way to explore those ideas and really put yourself kind of in a different frame of mind. And, you know, whether it's any kind of like friendship pairing or romantic pairing or whatever, like, you know, just taking yourself out of what's canon,
right,
and creating your own ideas and sharing those with people is really valuable, because, you know, maybe they might find a new idea that they didn't know before, and you could, you know, celebrate that. So yeah,
one thing I think I actually would like to see children calm down with more these days, which was really a non-issue in my day, was people really, really hate OCs. And I find that, oh, that's original characters. That is for a dear reader, a dear listener. Basically, when you write a character of your own and insert them into this licensed world, and it was kind of a little bit controversial when I was writing fan fiction in like the early 2000s. But people would talk about, oh, Mary Sue.
Mary Sue's and Gary Stews.
Yeah. Which is like, oh, your character is overpowered. Oh, how dare they love the protagonist. And that I find is so much worse now, because people want to read about the characters exclusively and are really focused on shipping, I find, or really hyper-focused on shipping. So, yeah, I just feel like that's another factor where kids really need to calm themselves a little bit.
I think it kind of comes under a wider umbrella of, like, you know, bullying behavior and tolerance and kind of, you know, accepting difference, accepting different approaches. And on one hand, yeah, I totally think that schools should be teaching and promote this. On the other hand, it really depends on the school that you go to and where you go to school, because then you're going to have certain environments where a kind of conservatism is the norm.
That's where
it gets a little bit tricky, I think, because, you know, the judgment kind of comes with the territory.
Yes.
Especially if you're talking about stuff like shipping, which has romance inherent in it. And obviously, you know, whether you want teenagers to talk about it or not, they are going to talk about sex, and that is going to be part of it. You might not want them to, but they are still going to do it anyway. So I think it's one of those areas that, while I 100% agree that teaching is, there's a lot of benefits teaching it, who's teaching it and how they are taught to teach it is going to be just as important as the teaching, I think, because the last thing you want to do as well is kind of instill those kind of, I guess, kind of quasi-Puritan values on kids and scare the life out of them in a school environment when the online environment is already doing that, you know? It's difficult. It's a tricky one to balance, I think.
No, that is actually a very, very good point, because we all know in the States, unfortunately, in particular, in the UK, we have a lot of anti-trans, anti-LGBTQ, and of course, fan fiction is extremely LGBTQ focused. It's where a lot of the community expressed themselves for the first time. And right now, it's unfortunately a very conservative kind of mindset that's prevailing. That's like, kids should not know anything about alternative sexualities. Nothing. And I could see like some teachers, like, who are not objective, being like, oh, this is, God, what a nightmare it would be if, like, not only, like, online was policing, as you said, not only online's policing what you're writing, but your teachers as well. It's like, almost like teachers telling me, oh, it's illegal to do that, except now it's like, oh, it's immoral to do that.
Like, immoral. Oh, gosh. It's interesting how we've gone from, like, issues of legality to issues of morality, isn't it? Like, it's a very, I think it's really a sign of our times that that's what we're worried about now. But
we learn nothing.
We don't. We just switch targets, don't we? But yeah, I think generally cultivating an environment in which, because kids, I think kids are always going to be tribal to an extent. That's kind of how we form as teenagers, isn't it? We kind of, you know, bunch together in our little groups and our little identities. But I think teaching people to be tolerant beyond their little bubbles and beyond their spheres, you know, accepting, not just accepting other ships, but accepting, you know, like one of the things I always see kids getting angry with each other about is things like dark fic and stuff like that. Oh, you know, you can't write about taboo subjects and stuff like that.
Yes, it's always a thing.
Yeah, and that's kind of just an extension from when I was a kid. It's like, oh, you can't read those horror books. You know, that's all taboo. If you read, you know, it's
Goosebumps.
It's the same thing, just in different clothing, right? But but the source is the same. You know, I think teaching kids that fiction is a safe place to explore all manner of things because it isn't real and because, you know, fiction has no real life consequences. Teaching people the difference between healthy expressions of certain subject matters and real life. There is a gulf between those two things, and reminding kids of that, I think, is a good thing. And reminding adults of that is a good thing too, because I think adults forget that sometimes.
I think so. I think adults need several lessons about that.
Yeah. It's one of the best ways to you know, form empathy with people because you can explore those things, like you said, Laura, with, you know, in a safe way and learn about other people and other cultures and other experiences that are outside of your own. And that's so important to be able to expand your world. And, you know, a lot of kids don't have access to that and they don't have access to travel and they don't have ways to do that. But books and fiction, you know, are so easy. And, you know,
how many times
have we, you know, it's
exactly
free.
Like, how many times have we heard about like troubled people who became authors or whatever and books were their friends, like, because they had nothing else?
I was that child. I was the kid who, you know, books were my friends and books were my saviors. I was the kind of stereotypical kid, but you know, it's true, you know, you do get that. And you know, having a refuge in fiction, you know, not just reading it, but then being able to write it and being able to express your feelings through that medium. It's like, you know, it's therapy before kids realize that therapy is a thing. And I think for kids, you know, like I was a bully kid. I was, you know, I went through a lot of stuff at school and it was like, you know, expressing a lot of that on the page and being able to get it out. And, you know, it is an important outlet. It is cathartic, and letting kids have that is important, especially if
it's very important.
Yeah. Especially if they don't have that as a friend group or a peer group. And as Sarah was saying, you know, the opportunity to expand your friend group and your peer group, people that you might not have realized you had something in common with, but you do.
No, absolutely. No, it's really important. And speaking of children, Sarah, we were talking earlier about how you have a son, correct? And he is really into Minecraft. And I was thinking about maybe if teachers aren't really prepared to handle the really, you know, heavy subjects that come with writing fan fiction, maybe they could even do something as simple as saying, hey, your writing prompt for this day is to write about your Minecraft character. Tell me about their adventures in the land that you built, and not like, write a assignment about ice cream. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, exactly.
I think that's a very good direction for at least a start for the younger grades to jump in on.
Yeah. It's amazing to see how their faces light up too when it's something that they can relate to. And I had this experience too when I first discovered fan fiction. I didn't know that it was possible. You know, I was big into the X-Files and I didn't even know that was a thing that could happen, that I could read about these characters and that people could write the things that they wanted to see on the screen.
It kind of seemed like black magic at first when you first see your first fan fiction, doesn't it?
Yes, it opened up like this whole like vista of experiences that I didn't know were possible. And then, you know, I told my son, like, hey, if you don't want to write about this thing, write about Steve and Alex, you know, have them go on an adventure. Tell me, you build all these amazing cities in Minecraft and you build these houses. What happens in that house? What adventures do they get up to? And, you know, you can write about that. And he's like, really? And I'm like, yes, that is a thing that you can do.
That's the amazing thing, isn't it? When you get that, really? Because we were all there. Yeah. You could do that. Like, there are no rules. You could do whatever you want.
You won't explode?
Yeah, but you just come into it assuming that there are things. And maybe you absorb it through osmosis, like, oh, no, the proper way to write fiction, the proper way of fiction. And then when you realize, I can do whatever I want, that is the most freeing moment.
It's so, so freeing. And, I mean, even if you want to think about it from a, you know, say teachers saying, oh, that's a creatively bankrupt thing to do. It's really not, in terms of, especially something like Minecraft, because other than the name Steve and Alex, like, everything else is his. Yeah. Like, the best I can do in Minecraft is I build some lame ass, like, cave house and say, ah, there, I did that. I'm great. But as you know very well, like, kids can just, it's like just three dimensional. It's digital Legos. Like,
It's bonkers. And, yeah. It is so cool. And he'll come and show me these things that he does. And I'm like, should you be having that much screen time? And I really worry about it. But then I see the things that he makes and I'm just like, whoa, this is like an engineering feat of, you know, and he's using his brain and his imagination and building things and learning how to, you know, create. And of course, that's going to like serve him later in life, because he's going to see things, you know, from an engineering perspective and see things in a way that, you know, maybe I never will.
Yeah. No, exactly. Like, just because I can turn on Minecraft doesn't mean I'm going to build anything remarkable. It's fun. I can tool around. But I've seen, as you said, just people build these incredible vistas and stuff. And that's as valid as anything, really. Mm-hmm. In fact, I have zero right to complain about children on screens these days, because I find I did not really learn to love how to write until I learned to type and look on a screen. And that's because I have like a few minor learning disabilities that are vastly improved upon when I switched to typing versus handwriting. When I was a kid, computers weren't a regular thing in classrooms, like, until many, many years down the line. And so I was just always being berated, like, write slower, do better. You got to have – and I can't. My motor skills were not that good. So to me, writing, the act of writing, was kind of painful, as much as I loved it, because I'd be getting criticism for my handwriting and whatnot and my spelling, which was absolutely – and still is atrocious. So I think that even though we talked about how fan fiction, as we know, it kind of started with zines and stuff like that, it really blossomed with the digital age, because I think I'm not the only person out there who had trouble with their motor skills and really improved upon when they switched to the computer. And I think that actually segues into a valid topic about how fan fiction can be a good tool for children who have learning disabilities, because if you're not spending as much mental real estate on making your own world and instead saying, okay, here's Steve and Alex, that's handled. Now I can really focus on my sentence structure. Now I can focus on this and this and that. I think that's really, really, really important.
Absolutely. And my son is similar. I mean, he has anxiety and tendencies towards perfectionism, because he's the kind of kid, he worries so much. And he's like a sponge. He does all the absorbing, but he won't put anything out until he knows that he can do it, until he knows that he is confident and that he can produce what's inside his head, which is never the case when it comes to writing. Whatever is inside your head,
I wish,
never makes it to the page, ever. So, you know, I keep, as a writer myself, you know, I keep telling him that. I'm like, you just got to start and you can fix it later. You just got to get the words down. And it's okay if it's not perfect the first time, but he really struggles with that. And
I understand that.
Yeah. Like you said, like, having the characters established, having the world already established, and having him be so familiar with that really gives him a jumping off point to start thinking about the story and the action and what happens and the plot and that kind of thing. Whereas, you know, he doesn't have to sit and come up with character names and the whole world. He doesn't have to world build and all that. It's already there. So that's a really good point that, you know, it does help get them started off, I think.
I think I've said this before, but like, obviously now in my mid-30s, I can, you know, I can do all that. I can build the worlds. I can make the characters. I can do all of that. But I would never have had the confidence to do that or even knew that I could do that if I hadn't started off, you know, in someone else's sandbox. And
exactly.
Because the thing is, you don't realize how much you are building your own world within that world, right? You know, you've got, it's like, so you said Lego earlier, and it is like that. Like, you've got the set and you can build the exact thing that's on the box, right? But also, yeah, you can kind of make it slightly different or add things or take some bricks from that pile and make it look a bit different. And then maybe I want to build a tower over here instead of over there. And before you know it, you have actually created a world out of the world. And yeah, okay, all the pieces are there, but you're still rearranging them and you're still putting them in place. And then when you sit back at it, like with the benefit of a little bit of hindsight, and you look at all the work that you've done and you think, oh, wow, I have actually created, you know, I did more than I thought I could. It isn't like, you know, getting a colouring book and rigidly staying within the lines, mm-hmm, and picking all the right colours. It's more like, here's the colouring book. I can pick any colour I want. And actually, if I want to add some lines and turn this into something else, I can do that. You know, I think people underestimate how much creativity and autonomy goes into fan works. I think everyone who is familiar with it just assumes that you're literally just copying it. You're copying the story, but you're not. You're writing your own stories within the world. Like, you know, with X-Files, you can write your own cases. You can bring your own monsters of the week into it. You can do what you want. You can change the relationship dynamics. You know, as you said, Nadia, you could bring original characters into it. There's so many ways to extrapolate from the source material.
You can do alternate universe and put Mulder and Scully in high school or something.
Exactly. It's the cool thing. Coffee shop. How popular is the coffee shop AU?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's such a popular trope, right?
You're going to have to fill me on. I do not know the coffee shop.
Oh, the coffee shop. See, I don't go there myself, but it's like, you know, taking your favorite characters. What if they worked at Starbucks kind of thing? You know, what if they did this, you know,
right.
Or like a meet cute, like one of them's a barista and the other one's a regular customer and they always order the same thing and they fall in love over a cup of coffee, that kind of thing, you know.
I love hearing about this because this is something that absolutely did not exist whatsoever in my heyday of writing fan fiction.
Yeah, like, it's a relatively new thing. Yeah, like, and I'm too old for and too jaded for coffee shop AUs, but I like seeing people like.
I like the idea.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of pleasantly mundane, isn't it? And I don't mean that in an insulting way at all. I mean that in a kind of like, you've got this really, I don't know, violent and dramatic series. What if they worked at a coffee shop? I kind of love that. There's something pretty amazing about that.
I do like that.
There's also a Regency.
Yes.
X-Files.
Yes, I've read
Mulder and Scully in the Regency. Yeah. Yeah.
It's superb. Mm-hmm. I love those in particular because it really takes a lot of research. And I love writers who go hog wild. And that's another thing as well. Another underrated aspect of fan fiction is it actually turns you into a researcher. Because
yeah, it does. Strangely enough, it does.
Yeah, because in order to write anything that's vaguely, you know, obviously when you start out, you might not be worried about accuracy, but the more you do it, the more you think, oh, you know, where is this set? Where did this episode happen? How far is Mulder's house from Scully's house? You know, and all that kind of thing. Just little things, and you look it up and you do your research, and before you know it, you've got a database of all this information. You know, oh, where was the Jersey Devil first sighted? And, you know, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you become a researcher.
Yeah.
That's before you even get into alternate universes, which turns you into an even more of a researcher, but even just to write something in canon.
I just recently wrote a Final Fantasy IV fan fiction, and I had to look up how long it take for a body to decompose. Like,
oh, I love those ones.
Please don't look at my Google search history.
Nobody look at my Google search history. Oh, my gosh.
I'm a horror writer.
You
just
have
don't
no
go
idea.
There, yeah.
Yeah, don't even. it's a hot mess in there. I'm trying to remember, like, the latest thing that I've Googled that was really horrific, but I
did Google how to make a pipe bomb once, which was I worried about for a long time.
That one you put on your secret search.
Yes.
You put on your incognito.
Still thought MI5 were going to knock on my door at any moment, but I got away with it.
Yeah. I had to look up burns because one of my characters got burned by a dragon in the story I'm working on right now. So I was like,
oh, you
see.
Probably got some bad pictures.
So now I can tell you all about how to treat a burn.
So you become a researcher. And now you're a first aider. It's perfect.
Yeah. Exactly. The things you learn as a writer. Yep.
I think also one thing that's especially beneficial for children in particular is that when they write fan fiction, you kind of have an instant audience with you. And that means in turn that you have people who are very much more quickly engaged than if you wrote like your own universe. No matter how good of a writer you are, it is so much easier to get people invested in your fan fiction than it is your original fiction. And to be fair, they could go from your fan fiction to your original fiction. Happens to me all the time, and it's really great when that happens. But for children, I think, who are going to want like not only like valid criticism as quickly as possible, but also encouragement, because I thrive on the compliment sandwich. I don't know about anybody else. No matter how long I've been at this, you can't just come at me and say this, and this sucks. I have to hear some sort of good news. So kids will kind of learn how to give criticism and receive criticism.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, like get that gratification. And if you don't have that gratification, you're not going to continue writing unless you really hate yourself, which most of us do. Don't get me wrong, but. This makes it a little easier to keep on going. I think you two would agree with me on that one, right?
For sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. It is for me personally, I'm an obliger personality, so I have to know that people are enjoying the things that I'm doing.
Same.
And I need that immediate gratification, like you said. It fuels me and it keeps me going, because if I feel like I'm just writing for myself, I'm like, well, you know, I already have these characters living inside my head.
Exactly.
You know, they're always there.
Yeah.
And I don't need to write them down to experience that. But when I can share that with other people and they talk about things that my characters did and they laugh about it, like I laughed about it when it happened inside my head. I'm like, oh, right. It makes it more real, and it makes it so much more gratifying because I can share that with another person and then my characters are in their head too. And I was just thinking about how wild it is that I've put these books out into the world and there are people in Australia who have my characters living inside their head now. Like,
that's always the best feeling. And then they give you fan art
and
you lose your mind.
It's amazing. Yeah.
The best thing.
I'm still, fan art is the great, I just flip out when I see fan art. So yeah.
I must admit I'm the same with fanfic as well. Like if I'm writing a real rare pair or something and no one else is into it, I'm like, oh, why am I bothering? Like, you know, I can just sit here and run my imaginary scenarios in my head all day long. You know, but putting it onto the page does require like a little bit of feedback. I think one thing that's really good for kids to encourage them to start with is give them the encouragement first. Like, don't worry about critiquing. I think the instant gratification of fanfic for kids is all about motivation. It's about encouragement. It's about teaching them they can do it. Once they've built that confidence, they've got that foundation of I can do this, that's when you can come in kind of with the gentle critique and go, okay, let's talk about grammar, let's talk about world building, let's talk about all the little technical nuts and bolts. But first and foremost, they've got to believe they can do it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where fan fiction is uniquely poised to do that, because you do have that kind of instant, oh, I love this. I love this story. I love these characters. You know, let them have that. Let them have that first. You can worry about the rest of it later on.
I think you're definitely right about that, because I mean, we can all agree that the hardest thing is just getting it on the page, period. Like,
it sure is.
I have terrible executive dysfunction, which is a fancy way of saying I'm a terrible procrastinator, but I also worry just when I get started, I'm okay, but it's just like it is hard to write.
The blank page is terrifying, isn't it?
Ah, nothing worse. I have right now in my Google Drive, I have a review, and the only thing on that paper is a letter A. And I don't even know how the A got there, but that's where I am that's my life. That is completely my life. So you're absolutely right. Even if a kid gets something out and it's their first time, it's a complete dog's breakfast. It's like, good for you.
Yeah.
This was in your head. You got it on the paper. That's extremely hard. Let's work on it from there, but just, good job. You took the step.
You can polish what's on the page, but you can't polish nothing, right? And that's what I always tell myself.
True.
Yeah. You know, you can't work for nothing.
Yeah.
No, I actually think of something Margaret Atwood said, which is, if I waited for perfection, I would never write a word. And I would like to live by that. I really try to live by that, but I do my best. I'll just say that much.
Yeah. I'm a work in progress. I'm trying to train myself to write faster because, you know, I do agonize over every word. And it's like, you know what? This is the first draft. The whole point of a first draft is simply to exist.
Yeah.
Whatever words are there are perfect because they exist.
I have seen a good tip for writing a first draft, and that is switch your font to Comic Sans because then you can't take it too seriously. It works a little bit.
I like that.
I definitely draft in different fonts. Like, my font for drafting has to match the mood of the story. Ah. So, like, you know, if I'm writing historical fiction, I'll do, like, a fancier font. And if it's, you know.
That's pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. Like I'm writing for this book that I'm writing right now wants to be in Garamond. So, like, I don't know why, but it just.
Garamond's a nice font. I like
that's how it's coming out. It looks, you know, kind of, yeah. A little bit antique, kind of. So, yeah.
Yeah. I never heard of that before. That's
it's
really
working.
Cool.
I don't know why.
You kind of have that visual aspect of it, which mm-hmm. is still a very important part of writing as well. Huh. Neat. Mm-hmm. One final point to hit on here is I think it would actually also be beneficial to teach fan fiction in school because kids can learn about law. Because I think we all had that one friend in school who just wrote Final Fantasy VII, filed off the serial numbers, and said, "This is mine." And whereas kids kind of have to learn it's perfectly okay to write fan fiction, it's not okay to take someone else's story and say, "This is mine." So that might not exactly be first priority, but it certainly should come up at some point.
We don't have Anne Rice anymore, you know, God rest her soul. But, yeah, we, I think all of us who lived through the kind of Anne Rice era, we remember the kind of what felt like terrible cosmic unfairness of like the threat.
Terrifying.
The real threat that Anne Rice's lawyers were going to find you and knock on your door specifically if you ever wrote anything about Lestat ever. But yeah, like, you know, the difference between fair use and just like totally ripping someone off, you know, there's nothing wrong with like, doing that for a school project if your teacher turned around to go, okay, look, the technical aspect of this is fine, but you kind of did just like copy this completely wholesale, didn't you? Like you can't, that's not okay.
you can't.
We all do it. No. We all do it a little bit. You know, everyone does that when we start out, but like, you know, as long as someone teaches you that, you know, plagiarism is a thing.
Yeah. Well, they do teach you that in my writing classes. We had assignments.
Good.
Yeah. We had assignments like pick an author, read their work, and then write a story like them.
Oh.
But, you know.
I've done that.
Yeah. So it's a great way to practice and a great way to learn different styles and to find your voice. But at the same time, you know, you can't take the specific elements.
Emulating the style of it is really cool. Like, I think when I first started out, my absolute favorite fan fiction author, it's slightly embarrassing, but the reason I started out is because I wanted to write like her so bad. So I just kind of thought, if I write a story that's like kind of like hers, and I try and sound like her, but I write about different characters, then maybe I'll be as good as her. And, you know, I wasn't. I was absolutely not as good as her, but it was the first step in becoming nearly as good as her.
So. We all go through that period where we want to write like another author. My first one was S.E. Hinton who did like The Outsiders and Rumblefish, and because we read The Outsiders in school. And then I actually, for an assignment, I did a pastiche of a C.S. Lewis story. And that actually was really kind of – we talked about how I read a lot of Beano when I was younger. And I really kind of picked up that British dialect and mangled it and then fed it back through C.S. Lewis. And what came out was interesting. I'll say that much, but writing pastiches can be fun.
Yeah.
And like learning how to capture a character's voice.
Yeah.
Because personally Mulder and Scully, that's one of the things that made me so nervous to start writing. And one of the things that kind of held me back from putting my fan fiction out into public because Mulder and Scully have such a distinct voice.
Yeah.
And Chris Carter was very particular about how they sounded. And he would go through the scripts and rewrite scenes where he didn't feel like Mulder and Scully sounded like themselves. Plus, then you had on top of that, David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson adding their own acting skills and their own improvisations to their characters, and they were really unique, solid characters. So if I find a fan fiction that's X-Files and it doesn't sound like Mulder and Scully, and I put that in air quotes, but if it doesn't sound like them, I can't read it. So to capture that voice like on the page in a fan fiction is a really unique talent that takes practice.
Absolutely.
And that's a good thing to do, I think, because it helps you develop your own writing voice if you can emulate the other, you know, characters that already exist.
It helps you understand what voice is as well, doesn't it? Because I think that's one of those really nebulous things as a beginner writer. You don't really understand voice all that well until you kind of dissect it in exactly that way. Like, okay, how does Mulder talk? How does Scully talk?
Yes.
Or like if you get like, you know, if you're in video game fandom where it's all text-based, you know, like, you know, Final Fantasy VII, for example, you know, the characters still have distinct voices, and you know, trying to extrapolate that from text to your own text, and there's lots of different ways that you can do it, but learning how voice works and learning the importance of voice is one of those things that you only really learn by doing, I think.
I think so. I think that voice was the thing that took me longest to learn. I was looking back at some of my old writing from my 20s, God help me, and I had a good grip on environmental, like describing environments and events, but dear God in heaven, I could not write a voice. Everybody sounded the same, which was to say some like smart ass video game character from the 90s. And it was the worst part of it all was in my 20s. I thought I was incredible. I thought I was great. And that's a really bad part of being 20.
Is it bad though? I think that's kind of a good thing. That moment of like, I'm immortal and no one can touch me in your 20s. Yeah, okay. It does make you, it does turn you into a little bit of an asshole sometimes. And like, you look back and go, oh my God, and you cringe. But like, I think you have to have that a little bit.
You might be onto something.
In order to push through.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're onto something there, because if I didn't think, hey, screw you, I'm editor, I'm the best writer that ever existed, you're probably just going to give up. But the 20s does give you that fire that you need to push through the awful times. And eventually, the most important thing to learn with any sort of writing whatsoever is that practice does make perfect. Oh, God, I pulled out a cliche. So there you go. I'm still not perfect. So practice doesn't make perfect, but it makes something resembling
progress.
Something.
Practice makes progress.
Practice, yes, I like that. That's,
yeah.
That's perfect.
Yes, because as we have been over, progress is by far the hardest part of writing. So this has been a really, really great discussion. I really enjoyed this. I hope you two enjoyed it as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a blast.
Yeah, it's been really good to talk fan fiction with people. I never get to talk fan fiction, so.
I know, right?
I am always here to talk about fan fiction 24/7. If you guys want to go ahead and promote some stuff, Laura, why don't you go ahead first? I know we talked a little bit beforehand, but let's do it again.
Right. So, I'm on Twitter as @LauraNMauro, and I'm also on sporadically blogging at lauramauro.com. Sorry. My short story collection, Sing Your Sadness Deep, is out now. And I'm also working on an as yet unannounced video game with the company Bonsai Collective, which will be hopefully announced sometime in the middle of this year.
So I'm writing for an unannounced video game too.
I love super secret squirrel projects.
And how about you, Sarah?
You can find me over on Twitter at Sarah L. Blair, and you can find me on Instagram at author.sarah.blair. I also am one of the hosts over at the X-Cast and X-Files podcast, and you can find that on Instagram at xcastpod or Twitter at @X_cast. And I have a series. My book series is titled Tides of Darkness series, and it's a lot of fun. If you like fan fiction, sure. I drop a lot of Easter eggs in there. So, you know, it's good times. It's an adult paranormal series. So, yeah, good times.
Awesome. And if you, dear listener, think that this episode is cool, we have tons of more content like it. Just visit the Retronauts Patreon at patreon.com/retronauts for access to media that is even more spiritually nourishing than your favorite OT3 fanfiction. Support us at the $3 level to get early access to weekly episodes. Support us at the $5 level to get episodes a week early, as well as 2 exclusive episodes a month. Support us at the magic number 64 for the opportunity to set a Retronauts topic of your own once every 6 months. As of this recording, there's one spot left, so go ahead and snap that up. As for me, I am Naughty Oxford, co-host of the Accident Blood God RPG podcast. We talk about RPGs old and new, Eastern and Western. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/bloodgodpod and or follow me on Twitter at Nadia Oxford. I also do a Final Fantasy 14 podcast called Charlie and Dropouts, and that is also under the Blood God umbrella. So if you support us, you can get access to that. And I don't know, maybe pet Grahatia's ears, which, gosh, I want to pet his ears.
Don't we all?
So until next time.
Sorry.
That was off the cuff. Until next time, thank you for listening. And don't forget to password lock those doc files on your family computer. They are not as well hidden as you think.